introduce you to our first guest, Peter Etter, who's had quite a career. In fact, at one time, he served as vice president, chief operating officer at David X. Manners Company in Westport. He also was the senior editor and associate publisher of Reveries.com, an online marketing publication, and The Hub, a print marketing publication. Born in Manhattan, has several college degrees, started his career after his high school graduation in the mailroom of J. Walter Thompson, which at the time was the largest ad agency in the world. And we have Peter on the program today because he wrote a piece which I read on the website, ctbythenumbers.info, which I might add is a great website. He wrote a piece, Can Trust Be Restored? And so with that as a backdrop, we welcome to the program Peter Etter. Peter, welcome to Front and Center.
Thank you, Dan. It's good to be with you.
Peter, what motivated you to write the piece?
I've been watching certainly what happens politically, and being very involved in my community, Darien. And by the way, I hope that's not one of those two communities on the list. To work with our seniors, senior myself, and knowing that it's becoming increasingly difficult, if you will, to keep that safety net for seniors whole. And a good deal of it has to do with an awful lot of the politics of today. The distrust, if you will, that I see in politics. It used to be there was a lot more compromise. Today, compromise, I think, is a much more difficult thing. And it's sad. And it, while we all recognize it, I think, on the national level, I think it's occurring at the state and local level as well. So I decided that, you know what? It's really a question of trust, and trust should be able to be restored. After all, I think we are trusting people, aren't we?
Well, I think that's what boggles the mind of a lot of people, that at heart, most of us seem to be trusting people, but that doesn't translate, for example, to the political world, among other areas, which you write. You say this lack of trust extends beyond politics. Talk about that.
And I do see that as being true, and again, I think to some degree, or to a great degree, a lot of it has to do with the media fragmentation that we have today, with the fact that when we hold an opinion, each one of us, I think, can find supporting opinions of our opinions on the internet, on social media, on the great number of television and radio stations that we have. It's almost like folks are reinforcing their own opinions and strengthening those opinions at the cost of not hearing what others' opinions are, and realizing that there should be some point in between where, again, we can find some common ground for the common good.
Are these varied opinions supported by facts?
Well, where do we get our facts from, Dan? You know, supported by facts? We'd like to think so. I mean, you know, we Google and we Wikipedia and we rely maybe on what we consider national, international, trustworthy media. But even there, I think opinion tends to get tends to color even what we consider as news today.
And I think you make a very interesting point when you say that there doesn't seem to be an effort to look at the other side of the story, for someone who holds an opinion to examine the other side, right?
That I think is the biggest, right, the biggest concern, absolutely, the mm-hmm. biggest concern. And I think we've got to find the time, I mean, to take a look at others' points of view. I just ran across C.S. Lewis' quote, which I love, and he said, safety and happiness can come only from individuals, classes, and nations being honest and fair and kind to each other. And to get to that honesty and fairness and kindness, I think you've got to listen and you've got to explore others' opinions and then weigh them with your own and say, okay, we need to get to some form of compromise so that we can trust each other.
How much is money driving all of this? In other words, you look at the various websites, you look at the various cable news channels, and they all seem to be advancing their agenda or their opinions, and obviously they're underwritten by money.
Yeah, I think that that's certainly true. There's a lot of money being poured into every position now, and that tends to cloud perhaps what is truly truth. But again, it's not just the money. As I said, it's the fragmentation of the media. The fact that if you have an opinion, you can reinforce that opinion just by looking at websites and social media contacts and publications that support your views.
Yeah. In other words, if you're looking for validation, there's a good chance you're going to find it, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
It's interesting. And then we see the situation in Washington, D.C., and how much do the special interests drive that landscape, do you think?
Yeah. It makes it even cloudier. It makes it even more of a concern. One of the things that I think is so important, and somebody's written a great book, it's called The Vanishing Neighbor. It's a book by Mark Dunkelman. And it's about the transformation of the American community. And essentially what it says is neighborhoods are disappearing. And it is in neighborhoods that we find so much, or we used to find so much of compromise, because you were with your neighbors and you saw the person next to you or the person down the street or you saw them in the supermarket. Today that neighborhood is disappearing. This is one of the reasons underlying what I've done in Darien with At Home in Darien, which is an aging in place organization in Darien. At Home in Darien, if I can just take a minute, it's for anyone 60 years of age or older who lives in Darien. And you're a member. You're absolutely a member. There's no fees. There's no qualifications. You don't have to go in front of anybody. You're automatically a member. And what we do is we say, okay, we're 60 years of age or older. How can we as a community support each other?
And what's the response been?
It is very welcoming. It is very welcoming. Because, again, then you get to go to community resources, like a library, like community events. They're free, for example. And you can go to them, and you can hear points of view, and you can discuss points of view, and you can realize that... It must be supported, irregardless of what your income level is, right? Irregardless of what your age is. You know, a 60-year-old and a 90-year-old, we're both in that same age bracket, but we're vastly different. And by helping each other, by volunteering and working with each other, you tend to put a face to it, and you say, you know what, these folks need help, and this is what we need to do. And that is what I think has to be... reinvigorated, if you will, on the political landscape, because again, we rely so much today for social services from the city, the state, and the federal level.
So when you sit down and you interact with people in this, let's say, 60 to 90 year old demographic, can you walk away with differing opinions and still be friends?
Absolutely. You're still neighbors. I mean, you know, I grew up in Manhattan, and I grew up in a neighborhood that was predominantly refugee Jewish, and we were Roman Catholic, German and Austrian immigrants, and there were plenty of Irish kids around. And, yeah, I mean, we had our disagreements, and it was toward the end of the World War, and, you know, folks called folks Nazis. But you know what? If you lived in the same building with different faiths, and you saw them every day, and you helped them, you came to realize that they, like you, were individuals with aspirations and also struggling and to work toward a common good, which was to help people.
Peter, do you think we can get that trust back in this country?
I'm hoping. I'm really hoping. I tend to think of myself as a mostly optimistic person. Don't ask me what it's going to take, Dan. I really don't know. I think it can be done. I think it's not going to be easy, And I think it has to start in two directions. It's got to start from the top down, and it's got to start from the bottom up.
Talking with Peter Etter, and again, I direct you to the website, ctbythenumbers.info, at his piece headlined, Perspective, Can Trust Be Restored? Peter, you've had a fascinating life. You went to work right out of high school for, at the time, the world's largest advertising agency. Talk about that.
Well, I did. I graduated actually from high school on a Thursday, and Friday morning I started in the mailroom with J. Walter Thompson. My parents were immigrants. We had lots of family in war-torn parts of Germany and Austria, and needed the money. And actually, my dad worked in the Essex House, and one of the permanent residents of the Essex House was the president of J. Walter Thompson, Norman Strauss. And my dad waited on him one night and said, "Hey, my son needs a job, and he's interested in journalism and advertising." And Strauss said, "You know what? Have him come down," and he said, "We'll see if we can get him into the mailroom."
What happened after that?
Well, I spent 4 years there, and then I moved to the corporate side of the world. Ended up in advertising and marketing jobs. One of the great delights was 8 years later, in 1968, I became the national advertising manager for the Singer Company. And our advertising agency was J. Walter Thompson. And I used to, when I was working at Thompson, I used to work in the dining room because it was great because you got an extra hour of pay and they fed you because going to school at night, those were two wonderful things. But to go back, I left there in 60, but to go back in 68 as a client and eat lunch there, that was a very special day.
I'll bet. And in the meantime, you managed to find time to get 3 college degrees. How did you do it?
Oh, just being persistent, you know, having a great support team. My wife was so supportive of me. And just, you know, my dad, who left Austria at the time of in the 20s of great inflation, he always said, "What you put in your head, no one can ever take away from you." And he was right. And so I went to City College. Went there for free, which was wonderful, 9 years, picked up a B. I took a year off and then started on a master's program. So I always enjoyed learning, so it wasn't really a struggle. It was something I wanted to do, not something that I had to do.
And what about languages? How many languages do you speak?
Well, my native tongue is German, although you may not hear it with my New York accent. Until I was born in Manhattan, but until I was 6, we didn't speak a word of English at home, and then we learned, English together. My brother and I taught our parents English. So German is certainly my mother tongue, and then English, and then Spanish and Latin in high school, and then when I retired, Kathy said to me, "What are you going to do to get out of the house?" And I said, "I'm going to learn about China and things Chinese." So I've studied about China. We've been there, and I've been taking Mandarin. I don't think I'll ever be fluent in it, but it's a wonderful language, though.
In being active as you are, does that help you think health-wise, the fact that you're always going, always on the move, it seems?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's interesting. I think as you age, you're one of the observations, and I'm 77, one of the observations I make as I age is your universe starts to shrink, okay? And by that I mean you don't travel as much because physically you can't. You know, we can't get on a plane and sit for 15 hours and go to China. You lose your natural friends because your relatives and your friends start to die. But the important thing, I think, is you don't let your universe, you don't let it really shrink. What you do is you refocus it. So you focus more on acquiring new friends, doing new things, exploring new worlds that are closer to you. And I think that's one of the secrets to staying healthy and being alert.
That takes a certain amount of self-discipline and inner motivation, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It takes, you know what it takes? Being happy with your life.
Right. Absolutely.
And I think if you're happy with your life and you try to help other people and you reach out, I think it's fairly easy.
I would be remiss if I did not mention that you have also served your country. Talk about that.
Well, that was, so I was going to City College at night, and, you know, we had the draft, and I did not want to be drafted. And the National Guard had a deal, this was back in 1956, that if you served 9 years of National Guard service, you didn't have to do any active duty. And the 9 years was 48 nights a year, one night a week, 2 weekends in the summer. I mean, 2 weeks in the summer and 2 weekends a year, one in the spring and one in the fall. And actually, Dan, it worked out exactly to 2 years of service. So I did that because I wanted to finish my college. So first I took all my Monday, Wednesday classes, and I had a National Guard unit that met on Tuesday. And then when I had to take all my Tuesday, Thursday classes, I switched to a guard that unit that met on Monday. And I actually became a qualified Army engineer. I also took correspondence courses and became a qualified Army engineer because the pay was also better. But talk about an act of faith. If you ever tried to learn to operate a road grader by manual, remember this was pre-internet, so you couldn't go YouTube and watch it. Yeah. And then you sit in the cab one after reading about it and driving it. That was a challenge.
I'll bet it was. You're a member of the World Future Society.
I am.
For those in our audience who do not know, what is the World Future Society?
It's really a society of futurists. The folks that think about and write about and discuss and take a look at the future.
And what does the future look like?
Well, depends on who you ask and the day of the week you ask it, Dan. Again, for me, I think the future is bright. I think there's many challenges. I think that we as a country, as a globe, have awoken to many of those challenges, be they, climate change, be they pollution issues. I think we're doing a better job. But much more needs to be done. Much more needs to be done.
You've seen so much just in the area of technology, how we have evolved. Does it boggle your mind to see how far we've come?
Yes, it's really surprised me, and it's delighted me. It's absolutely delighted me. I mean, the fact that I can so easily communicate with people around the globe now, that we have so many tools. But I see some concerns as well. I mean, I'll give you one quick example. I mean, the whole idea behind the Internet was to create a World Wide Web available to everybody. And what's happening now is it's being shut down. It's being nationalized. China, Russia, even us to some extent. And here's where I'm a little bit sad, because some of the promise that it held, I think for whatever reason, it could very well be changed, and it could be curtailed.
It really is astounding to see some of what's happening as far as nipping around the edges of the Internet. And yet, if we just turn back the clock a bit, let's go back to 1980. Who could have envisioned, even though we were advanced technologically even in 1980, who could have envisioned an Internet in the palm of our hands, Peter?
You're absolutely right. In 1980, I went to NYU and I got my second master's in interactive telecommunications. And it was just at the start of the Internet era. It was Telenet is what it was called. And it was a 60-credit course for over 4 years. And I absolutely delighted. And one of my papers I remember getting an A was I created in 1983... I created a paper saying that there would be a website where if you were dieting, you could use the website to help you diet. And, of course, I never thought that people would be wearing bracelets today. I mean, that wasn't in my crystal ball.
Right. Amazing. By the way, if people want to read about your life experiences, they can go to MrBellersNeighborhood.com. Talk about that.
Well, that's a website that's been up about a dozen years, and Tom Beller created it, and it's stories of for and about New Yorkers in New York, and I've written some essays that are on that website. Yeah, it's a great website. So I've written some reflections on Even silly things like window washers, to some more serious things. But it's a great website. If you're a New Yorker, you like New York, it really gives you some keen insights into New York.
What did you like about New York? What do you like about New York?
You know, I think if you lived in New York, you couldn't stereotype people. What I liked is just the energy and the fact that there's so many religions, nationalities, income levels. It's so vibrant and so mixed together. You couldn't be prejudiced if you grew up in 219 Audubon Avenue in Washington Heights.
Terrific. And in summation, Peter, on your piece about perspective and trust, what would you say?
What I'd say probably is that what we really need to do is we really need to listen to others, to take their points of view in hand, and also hopefully to have others as open as we are to theirs. That's really what it needs. Again, just the analogy of a neighborhood.
Well said. Peter, thank you very much for spending some time with us today on Front and Center, and hopefully we'll talk down the road.
Great. Look forward to it, Dan.
Take care.
Keep cool.
All right. You too.